Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli, Money, Riches, and Wealth. I was just trying to get used to this. So actually what we're doing tonight is we're testing. Chris and I are testing what it's going to be like with Drew down in Florida doing the radio show. And Chris or somebody here, running the board and so forth. Right, Chris?
Sure. It's going to be seamless.
It's going to be. It is seamless right now, isn't it?
It is. It's great to be here. Welcome everyone to the show.
And
another week.
Another open show tonight, Chris.
It is. What does that mean, Drew?
That means that our listeners are our guests, and they get to determine the direction of the conversation, and they can ask any question they want, whether it's income taxes, which we're certainly enjoying hundreds and hundreds of income tax returns, and the complexities of this year. There are immense complexities this year. So we've got that going. Then you've got all the investment questions people are asking, quite a few investment questions. Then you have the 401ks, IRAs.
I was going to say retirement plans.
Retirement plans is a big issue.
You still get money in those things.
Absolutely. So, you know, we need to be here to answer any question anybody wants to. If you want to get on the line, 410-922-6680. You know, anything. We could be oceans away from people and still answer all their questions.
There you go.
And that's the cool thing about technology today.
I remember the time you called in from Bulgaria.
Romania.
Romania, 2 in the morning. We have Hal, who has a question, and he's calling from Illinois. So he's got a question about rental property. So let's go to Hal.
All right.
Welcome to the show, Hal.
Hello. How's it going?
Great,
sir.
How
you doing, Hal? What's up? How can we help you?
I sold a house, a rental house. I was only on capital gains. Well, your cost basis, I depreciated it all, so that's zero. That
okay.
That doesn't get counted in with the capital gain, does it?
Well, it does and it doesn't. It gets counted in as a capital, recapture of depreciation, which normally is done at a flat 25% tax rate.
Yep, I pay that. But that comes, I sold it for like 140. The cost be 50, or I've used it, 50 for the depreciation. So will that be like 90,000?
So, yeah, so sort of. It's like, whatever your actual appreciation was from the price you paid for it upwards will be long-term capital gains. But the recapture of depreciation takes place in a different way on the tax return,
yep.
And that's normally at a flat 25% tax rate. Plus, in this state that you live in, or the state that the real estate was in, the state's going to want income tax on the gain also.
Well, it's in Wisconsin, so I haven't done it yet, but... The other thing too is like you buy a carpeting or whatever, you depreciate it.
Yeah.
That you don't have to recapture.
You probably will recapture. Well, it depends. It depends if it's still there, and there's still some value to it. You might have to recapture some of that also.
Okay, but I'm really on my third floor.
Yeah, so now that's where it gets interesting. So, if you've done away with the flooring and you brought in new flooring and now you're on a third floor and it's the last flooring, that would be the one that you would potentially have to recapture something with.
Okay, but okay.
So, it's who did your tax return? Did you or did somebody else or what?
I do them. I'm just kind of, we just sold it, but I'm working, kind of looking at it for next year.
Now, are you familiar with the concept of Delaware Statutory Trust 1031 exchanges?
Yep. I didn't do that because then you had to buy another one. I think it might
No. You didn't hear what I said. You know, Delaware? 1031 exchange, you're familiar with the 1031 exchange. I'm talking about a Delaware Statutory Trust where you go and you somebody's put together a bigger investment deal with a bunch of people, but it still qualifies for a 1031 exchange. That's the cool part about it. You don't have to do anything. You just take your cash from the sale, give it to them. They buy, like the last one we did was an Amazon distribution center and so forth. So, and you don't have to worry about a thing. They take care of it all. And, you know, it's not as good an investment if you're picking it out yourself, but it's still pretty darn good. And it gives you all the tax deferral you want.
Okay.
You need to learn about that. Delaware Statutory Trust 1031 Exchange.
When I get home tonight, I'll look it up. And Delaware Statutory
Trust 1031. Delaware Statutory Trust 1031 Exchange. All right?
Okay.
Great.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for calling. Great. We've got Gene in Catonsville. Let's see if we can do that before we go to traffic. Okay. We got a couple minutes here.
All right.
Gene, what's your question tonight on trusts?
Pretty quick question.
Yeah.
Let's say you have 10 different accounts everywhere. Some are mutual funds, some are bank accounts, some are brokerage accounts, and they all have either POD or TOD, whatever they call it.
Yep.
And then you take, you know, a bunch of them and you put them in a trust.
Okay.
Does the trust trump the PODs and the TODs? What takes preference?
The titling always trumps everything. So if you retitle the accounts in the name of a trust, the trust name on the account will trump everything.
So if my bank account says, Adam and Eve Jones, and I just make a trust and put Adam and Eve Jones bank account at Wells Fargo.
Yeah, so let me give you an example, Gene, to make it this simple. Okay, so let's say you have Adam and Eve bank account and you put a TOD on it for Cain and Abel, okay?
Right.
We'll keep it in context here. And then all of a sudden Adam dies. Who gets the account, Cain and Abel or does Eve? And the answer is Eve because she's in the titling of the account. Okay,
right.
So now if Adam and Eve take their names off the account and make the Adam and Eve trust for the benefit of Cain and Abel, and that's the title on the account, even though there's a TOD to Cain and Abel, if that trust says we're going to do something else with it and that trust it keeps going, and it controls the asset, not the TOD.
All right, so you would have to change the name and put the word trust in the name of the account.
Well, you would actually have to have a trust, and right. You would have to get a new tax ID number, et cetera, et cetera. And if you establish a new trust, it will dictate and control the account from that day forward. All right?
Thank you.
All right, buddy. Good call.
Okay.
Chris?
I think we're right at that point. We're going to pause and take a look at traffic.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBN.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. And even though I'm not there with you in person, Chris, I still don't think much of your music. But that's okay. You know?
Chris, the producer. I like Chris, the producer's music most of the time.
So
I don't know what that was.
Tell me who that was.
I don't know who that was.
Come on. You know, I know. I even know that one. That's simple. Anyway, we're here on an open
Stevie
show.
Wonder.
We're here on an... I have to even consider answering that question. So we're here on an open show. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and ask a question.
Lines are open.
All lines are open. There's nobody on the line right now, so if you want to call in and be a part of that, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and be part of the show and direct the conversation in the way you want to go. And right now you can get in because there's nobody on the line right now, so it's time to call in, 410-922-6680. And there's my man. Hey, Chris, how you doing? And anyway, let's. We have a topic here tonight, don't we, Chris? O'Shea.
We got tons of topics.
You know, one that's interesting that I think a lot of our listeners are thinking about is Bitcoin. You know, what about these cryptocurrencies? I keep getting that question asked. What about these cryptocurrencies? So, you know, here's the deal. So cryptocurrencies started out in the criminal dark world. In other words, you know, these people who said, you know, hey, with cryptocurrencies, Chris, you got to back off on me. Chris O'Shea. There you go. Stay away from that microphone too much. So cryptocurrencies, the dark world really liked cryptocurrencies because they were unable to be traced. And so they started to propel the market. And all of a sudden, people start seeing it go up. And then, you know, other people started to get onto it. And then all of a sudden, you know, some groups and companies got together and said, hey, you know, I think we could work with this. I think we could use something. You know, we could do business with this. So then became started that you could actually use it to buy things. Then really the criminal world said, this is great. You know, now if I'm going to steal money from people and I'm going to hijack their computers, I'll ask for Bitcoin because nobody's going to be able to trace me and stop me from doing what I'm doing. And so it really, and I can do business with it too. I can buy things and so forth, and nobody will know what I'm doing. And so it really became popular, and prices really started to go up. And then more people got in. It became more institutionalized, and now Tesla's coming out saying, "Hey, we bought it in our company," and so forth. So now here's the next phase that's happening. And keep in mind that it's not just Bitcoin. They keep saying Bitcoin is a limited thing, et cetera, et cetera. But keep in mind that many virtual currencies can be created. There are 40-some hundred cryptocurrencies currently trading at this moment in time. So it's not like, yeah, Bitcoin is limited to 21 million, but there's 4,500 Bitcoins out there, different names, but they're out there. And they can become just as popular and easy to use as Bitcoin. And so now, but here's what's happening, and what's making it very popular right now, is that a lot of people are starting to think of it as an alternate currency to your nation's currency. So in other words, instead of holding your money in U.S. dollars, you're holding them in Bitcoin or Ethereum or Lite or Medela or something of that sort. And so a lot of people are thinking, you know, why should I hold my money in dollars when the dollar could lose value against the British pound or the euro or whatever? But Bitcoin keeps going up and up, and so I'm just going to buy a cryptocurrency and I'm going to make money. Well, you know, that's the theory right now. Is it a true theory? Well, only time's going to tell whether it's going to prove to be a true theory that cryptocurrencies will become the world currency reserve. Right now, it's the U.S. dollar. And if the world accepts cryptocurrencies as the world currency reserve, I don't want your dollars, I don't want your wands, I don't want your yens, I don't want your euros, I want a cryptocurrency. That's what I want. You give me a cryptocurrency, and if I want to change it into a currency of a nation, I'll do that myself. If that becomes the world currency reserve, then Bitcoin and all the other virtual currencies are absolutely going to be worth a fortune. If not, and especially if governments crack down and say, hey, we're just not going to let this happen, then they are worth what they're worth, which is zero. Their cryptocurrency is not worth anything. It's nothing. It doesn't have a government behind it. It doesn't have a taxing authority behind it. It doesn't have national parks behind it. It doesn't have foreign reserves behind it. It is nothing. It is a virtual, theoretical thing. And, you know, you really want to get your mind around something that's bizarre. There are people that are buying virtual real estate, you know, in some quote-unquote virtual world. You can never go there. You can never do anything with it. You can't plant anything on it. You can't mine anything on it. You can't do anything with it. You can't build a house on it. All you can do is these virtual things on this land, and they're paying hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars for virtual real estate. I have no idea as to why people do that, but, you know, I mean, this is the world we live in today, and that's a fascinating thing. Anyway, Yeah, so that was my monologue on cryptocurrencies.
Well, it's talked about more and more. You're seeing it. It's more accessible every month, it seems. New announcements with different companies, what have you. Our number here, 410-922-6680. That's the number to get on the line and to ask your question. It could be about retirement plans. Drew, people doing taxes, you know, they can still get money into retirement plans, right?
You can do IRA or Roth, or if you have an I-401k, you can still do that. You can still set up a SEP. You can even set up an I-401k now. And
got an HSA?
You know, an HSA, health savings account. And I'll tell you, you know, you think about the power of what we're dealing with right now on these tax returns. So a client comes in with a $160,000 married couple, and one of the spouses doesn't have a pension plan. And next thing you know, I can put $7,000 into an IRA and drop their income down to $153,000. That's a lot of extra stimulus recovery credit I can pick up. You know, you really have to be paying attention to IRA deductions this year. You have to be paying attention to married filing separate this year, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's great. We still have several open phone lines. We have Jim and Glenn Burney, who has got a question for us. Let's see what's on Jim's mind. Jim, welcome to the show. What can we do for you?
Good evening, fellas. I actually called in about a month ago, and Drew was very helpful about mentioning Delaware statutory trust. I looked them up. I have a quick question regarding the tax implications for 1031s. So let's say I bought a house originally for $200,000, fully depreciated, and I'm netting $300,000 from the sale. My question is, how much can I actually put towards the next property? Is it the $300,000 plus the recapture? In this case, it would be, you know, 25%. Or how does you had mentioned in an earlier call that the capital, there was a
separate tax on
the recapture.
Yeah, but you won't recapture anything if you put the full value of what you're selling into the 1031 exchange. There will be no tax consequences on that. So in other words, let's say I sell something for $300,000 and I buy something for $300,000. There's going to be no taxes of any sort. The depreciated property will just, the basis of the old property will just move into the new property.
Okay.
Am I making myself clear on that? So you're not going to recapture.
I thought that there still might be a component for the recapture.
It's only the only way you're going to have anything like that, Jim, is if you take boot. In other words,
it only happens with the boot part of it.
That's right. And let's explain that to our listeners, because you might not understand it, but they may not. And boot would be if I sell it for $300,000, but I buy a place only for $250,000, and I end up with either a $50,000 reduction of debt or a $50,000 of cash. Now, that's called boot. And that boot would be taxable. And, it would be, there's an order as to how it is considered taxable.
Great. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right.
Okay.
Good call.
Yep.
Okay.
Bye. Great.
We got to go to traffic, eh, Chris?
I think we could probably do that. Chris is shaking his head. Yeah. But now's the time you can get on a call. 410-922-6680. In the meantime, we're going to see what's going on with traffic and weather, and we'll be back.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Yep. Gotta like those old Beatles songs, you know?
No, it's,
don't know. You're hitching a ride, Chris. We gotta go to
Black Sabbath.
We gotta go to Open Show. We have an Open
Show.
We
do.
We're
have
doing,
several
Chris,
open phone lines, you know? But we have Patty in Bel Air, who is on the line, has a question. Let's go to Patty.
Let's tell our listeners our phone number before we go to Patty. 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, so that you can get on the line after we're finished with Patty. You're up next. Go ahead.
Patty, welcome to the show. What can we do for you?
Hi. I am 67 years old.
Okay.
I'm still presently working. I have a small, to me it's a lot, but to other people would be a small amount. I have approximately $73,000 in my savings account.
Okay.
Which I know is not earning anything.
Okay.
So my question to you is, what would you recommend me doing with that money to to make it grow?
Well, that's a difficult question, Patty, because, you know, unless we knew, do you have other assets, like in an IRA or a 401k?
I do have a 401k.
So what would you say your other total liquid assets are? Like 401ks, IRAs, savings?
I have a 401k, and that's it.
Is the 401k worth $20,000, $100,000?
No.
$5,000?
Like
$8,600. So the situation that we would probably say is that you're going to have to be extremely careful with what you would do with that $70,000, because even though you want it to grow, what would you do if it went down to $50,000 before it went to $90,000?
Correct.
I mean, what would you do? Would you panic?
Of course.
Yeah, but you see, you know, that's the thing. To get money to grow, sometimes you have to go through those valleys, and sometimes it happens quickly, you know, and that's the problem that you're going to have with, you know, the situation that you're in right now, is that, you know, what I would probably recommend is that you would keep $20,000 or $30,000 of liquid money and maybe allocate $40,000 to something, but you're really going to have to look for something that you know, that you can understand. If it does move down, you can't panic and say, "Oh, I got to get it back because I can't afford to lose this." It's a very difficult, with the question you're asking is extremely difficult. And if anybody were to say to you, "Oh, you know, Patty, this is the way you do it," you know, like you hear about these annuities, you know, these people who hawk these annuities act like, you know, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and Patty, you ought to do this. Well, you know, there's a drawback to everything. And especially when you're paying the commissions that these people are asking for on these things. So I don't have an easy answer for you, Patty. I wished I did. It's not that easy. And
you just let it sit in my savings account?
Well, the first thing would be to encourage you to open up an online savings account, which at least could pay you 0.5% versus
right.
The virtually nothing that your savings account is getting now if it's in a bigger bank, brick and mortar bank.
With a credit union.
Yeah, and even a credit union's not paying you much more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but an online bank, like Chris is saying, will at least get you up to 0.5%, 0.6%. The other thing I would definitely say that you should be doing is moving $7,000 a year into a Roth IRA. And in that Roth IRA, you should invest it aggressively in stocks. And I would work with a company like Vanguard to set up that Roth and move the money into it every year, $7,000 a year. And right now, you could do 2 years. You can do 2020 and 2021, so there's $14,000. It could go right out to the Roth and just start to grow tax-free. And that way, if it drops a lot, you know, you won't have to worry about it. It's only $14,000 right now. Even though it's still a lot of money to you, it's still not going to be the end of the world if it goes down 10 or 20 or 30% even right now.
Well, my 401k that I have more money invested in bonds than I do in stocks.
Well, if it's only $8,500, you should have it all invested in stocks. Because think about it, in your 401k, you're just putting new money in every year, right? You're continuing to contribute every time, right?
I contribute every week.
Yeah. So every time you buy, even if the market's going down, you just keep buying at lower and lower and lower prices, that if it turns, all of a sudden your money starts making money. That's how the market works for you. You want it to go down for a while, especially when you're just buying in, you know, and so forth.
So you're saying I should have more money in stocks than I do in bonds?
Yeah, because I'm not asking you to put a lot in stocks. I'm just saying you got only $8,500 in your 401k right now. So that's less. That's just about 10% of your total savings.
It's like 60-40 right now. 60 in bonds, 40 in stocks.
Well, but I think that your $8,500, your 401k, in my opinion, should be fully invested. 100% stocks. And you should take $7,000 and buy and invest in a Roth IRA. Go to Vanguard or T. Rowe Price and ask them to set it up for you and get the money to them and have them make a recommendation of how to invest the money.
Okay.
And tell them you just want to invest it in growth. And, you know, you're still going to have $70,000 of liquid cash or 60,000. And, you know, and so you still got plenty of safety because you got that 60,000 out there. And now you got these other pieces starting to grow. And you're constantly buying in at different prices. All right?
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
All right. You take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Our number here, again, is 410-922-6680. We've got a few calls here. Let's go to them. We've got Bill in Canton. Bill, welcome to the show. You got a question about Roth IRAs?
How are you this evening?
Great, thanks. How are you?
Great.
Good. Real quick, I have two certificates of deposit coming up for renewal in August, and I know nobody's paying anything on those, but one is just a regular old IRA CD. The other one is a Roth IRA CD. My question is, do I put one in another and keep it rolling? Do I take them both out? We invested in something that's going to pay just a little bit better, which I don't know what would be right now. I can hang up and I'll.
Well,
you don't.
I mean, there's no reason. It's pretty simple. Your Roth should always be invested aggressively, in my opinion, because the last investment, the last asset you want to touch in your personal finances is your Roth assets.
Okay.
So if I've got that long a time frame on my Roth money, then you invest it as aggressively as you can invest it. Now, your IRA, if you like conservative investments and the CDs you're satisfied with, I have no problem with the IRA staying there. But the Roth, the Roth needs to be invested. It needs to be invested aggressively. I would work with T. Rowe Price or Vanguard or somebody like Fidelity or Schwab. You know, stay away from commission people. You know, that's the key.
Sure.
You got to stay away from commission people.
Okay.
All right?
That's exactly why I called, and the artist for that song that you had, Hitching a Ride, is Vanity Fair.
Yeah, see, that's what I was going to tell him. He didn't listen to me there.
I know, Drew, I know you know all.
Thank you.
Say that.
So, we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. You got any?
We do. We've got Jim in Ellicott City. Let's go to Jim. Jim, welcome to the show. You got a question on taxes.
Yes. Being a Marylander, I know you're an ex-Marylander, and this leads up to the question of estate tax. And I am married, so I understand the law has portability, yet it is an issue for us, and we're considering moving out of Maryland. We're recent retirees, well, 2016, so coming up on 5 years, and we've been thinking about moving out, and I'm really getting serious about it now due to the estate tax. I don't see the situation improving here.
Oh, they're stuck. I mean, they've said $5 million. That's it. No inflation adjustment, even $5 million with portability. That's it. That's Maryland's stance, and they're pretty happy with it. They don't care that you and I are saying forget you. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I've spoken to my Maryland state senator about it, and she's not on a committee that handles taxation. But she didn't seem to really care. She's in the majority party. We'll leave it at that. So I kind of understand where she's coming from.
And haven't you listened to when I've had Governor Ehrlich on? And I asked him that question. I said, Bob, don't they understand? He goes, Drew, they don't care. They don't care. Period. You are not the type of people that are going to vote for them. They don't care. But don't they understand that we're the kind of people that end up paying the bills in this state? So, anyway, they don't care. Just move.
Yeah, that's about the only option. And is that true?
And it's the best option. There's 50 states in the United States of America, and there's only about 9 that have an estate tax.
And Maryland, by the way, has a dubious distinction of being the only state that has both an inheritance and an estate tax.
Yeah, Delaware, Virginia, 2 right next to you that you don't even have to go far. No estate tax, period. Go for it, you know?
That's right, yeah. Delaware and Virginia do not. And, okay. So I was curious. I took note of the fact a while ago that came to light that you and your wife had moved down to Florida. I have 4 friends that live down there. They also had moved out of Maryland, so... Anyway, we're seriously looking at it. I just wanted to see if there was any other workaround to possibly defer that,
Well, there are some things you can do with the Maryland estate tax that you can't do with federal estate tax. But, if Joe drops the estate tax for the Fed down to $3.5 million, then we got a real problem.
Oh, yeah. All right. I've heard talk of that. Yeah.
I got to run, so good call,
okay.
Jim.
Well, thank you very much.
I'll see you in Florida. Take care.
Okay, our number again to get on with us is 410-922-6680. We have to take a break.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Let you down.
You're going to sing it for us.
That's right. I can do that for you, Chris, if you want to. We're on an open show tonight. 410-922-6680.
That's right. We're the last segment of the show. We do have several open phone lines. 410-922-6680. We have John, who is graceful to hang with us through the break. He has a question about stocks. John, what can we do for you?
Okay. I'm not at our MD age yet. My wife and I have an annual income of about $150.
Okay.
And so that's just a background. Now, I want to give about $5,000 to my church.
Okay.
I have stocks that have done real well, both short-term gain and long-term gain now. And I would like your general approach. Here's what my choice is that I'm seeing. Tell me what your guess is. I have stock like Facebook that I bought at $25 that's now up to $300, okay? I have other stock that I bought at like $400 that's now up to $1,500. So in other words, I have some stock with smaller capital gain per share but greater percent gain. The Facebook shares percent gain is off the wall. The other stock did great too, 500 to 1500.
So let me ask you a couple quick questions, okay? So how old are you approximately?
I'm 68.
68, okay. Are you familiar with donor advised funds?
Not very much. I mean, heard of them, but let's say no.
Okay, so what you'd want to do, if I were you, is you take your highest percentage long-term. Hear that? Long-term. You never, ever use short-term gain stocks in a charitable contribution. So get every listener out there, do not ever give stocks with a short-term gain because you don't get to take the deduction for the full gain. You only get it for the cost basis of a short-term owned stock. So it has to be long term, and you always want to take the highest appreciated stock and give that away. Now, if you have one that you're anticipating to sell and realize a gain, I might give that one away before I'd give my highest appreciated away. So there are some different thought processes depending on what I'm thinking about doing. But if I've got two different stocks and I like them both, I would probably give away the one with the highest appreciation, long-term capital gain, into a donor advised fund. Now, why do a donor advised fund? So let's tell our listeners first, Jim, why the John, right? John. Is it John?
Yes, John.
Yeah, John. John, let's tell them why we give a long-term capital gain stock to charity, because you already know, but I don't think they do. So if I buy a stock at 25, like Facebook, it goes to 300, and I give that stock to charity, I get the deduction for $300 a share, even though I never paid the gain, the tax on the gain from 25 to 300. So it's a double whammy. Not only do I get a tax deduction for $300 a share, but I never pay taxes on $275 worth of gain. I mean, that's just a big win-win, but it has to be a long-term gain. And why do I do it into a donor advised fund? There's numerous reasons. Number one, into a donor advised fund, the minute I put the money in there, it's irrevocable. It has to go to charity. Okay? The beauty of it is I just get one receipt. So if I'm, you know, if I'm going to give the stock maybe to three different charities, maybe a mission and a church and a and some other type of, you know, charitable desire, I only need one receipt from the donor advice fund. And then from that donor advice fund, I can allocate that money out to whatever charities I want to. And here's another cool thing about it. I can be anonymous to the charities when I'm going from a donor advice fund. They don't need to know who I am if I don't want them to know who I am. And so, you know, there's a lot of reasons why you might like that approach. And another cool thing with a donor advised fund is I don't have to donate the money that I put into a donor advised fund, period. I mean, I have to sooner or later. But, if I put in $50,000, I could give out $5,000 this year. And next year I could give out $8,000. And, you know, and I keep the money invested, and I can invest it anything I want to. I can invest it in conservative, or I can invest it aggressive, and it's up to you. And so the cool thing is I can consolidate lots of charitable giving at one time into a donor advised fund and cover like the next 5 or 10 years possibly of all my giving that I intend to do. But I did it in one fell swoop into a donor advised fund. And with this current tax law where you get this $28,000 standard deduction, you're better off to do it all at one time instead of every year. And I could go through the math of that if you want to, but you're better off to do one big lump sum. So long term, highest appreciated gain, unless you have somebody you're going to plan to get rid of and pay taxes on anyway. Those are the types of things that you want to get into your donor advisory.
Now, highest appreciated gain. Remember, I have two kinds of stock. One went from 25.
But it's percent gain. Percent gain, John. Percent gain. Forget the dollars. The dollars are irrelevant. It's the percent that I'm worried about. If I'm up 50% in one and 150% in the other, I could care less if the one is trading at $1 million a share. It's irrelevant. I just want to know what's the highest percent gain. That's it.
Okay. Now, and the last thing, would your approach to the donor advised fund change if I were in the RMD age group at this point?
Probably. I probably want you to do the qualified charitable distribution, but it really depends on, you know, are you using a donor advised fund and how much money do you have in IRAs? Those are kind of things that I'd really want to think about. But yes, there is a power between the qualified charitable distribution. You have to be over. And remember, it's not RMD age anymore, Jim, John. It's now 70 and a half. RMD age is now 72. So there's a disconnect now between qualified charitable and the RMD age. It doesn't take long to get in coordination, but that first year and a half isn't RMD age anymore.
So could be that once I hit 72, that might just take those required distributions.
Absolutely. But you see, you're 68, so you give you do a donor advised fund for the next 4 years worth of gifts, all right, with something really highly appreciated that you're planning to possibly sell sometime anyway, and you put that in there. You reaccumulate cash that you would have normally given in cash to somebody. You reaccumulate that back in a brokerage account. You can even buy Facebook back if you want to. And then when you're 72, you start doing QCDs. That would be the general rule, but I don't know your whole situation, so I can't say for sure. All right?
Very nice. Thank
That's good. Very good strategy. Guy knows his stuff. And I want to hire him to be our next individual stock investment advisor.
Yeah, no kidding. And that's, well, that was the other point that you alluded to in the end of the call was, well, do you still like the company?
Yeah.
Right? And if you still like the company, maybe you donate it and maybe you buy some back. Or, again, depending on the gain that you have, how much do you give into the donor advised fund? You also have to think of, you know, again, we don't want so-called taxes to drive the whole situation. It's a part of the equation, but it's not everything. You think, okay, do you still like the stock? First and foremost.
So, but you know, even if you really, really like the stock and think it could go up dramatically higher, I could still take, let's say, $50,000 worth of Facebook, put it into a donor advised fund, and then take $50,000 of other cash that I have somewhere else and buy Facebook back.
Well, that's what I mean. Now, you want to do that second part.
Now, I raised my cost basis in Facebook from $25 a share to $300 a share, and it didn't cost me a nickel in tax to do it.
That's brilliant. And, yeah, that's the point, is that if you still like the stock, don't just get rid of it, the whole thing.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of strategies.
Sure.
Do we have anybody else, or are we out of time?
We do not. We have about a minute to talk about other subjects. And, again, I think – because we have until May 17, you have the ability for people to look at. We find it all the time. Okay, hey, this person only put, they wanted to do more on the HSA. They didn't put more money. They could put $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 in. They at least get the tax deduction on that. And who knows, it may trigger some other things, economic recovery checks, other things.
So what Chris, the easiest way to think about this is go to your W-2 and look in box 12. And if you see a code W, and you haven't contributed, if you're single, at least $3,500 to $4,000, depending on if you're over 55, or if you're married and have a family plan, $7,100 or $8,100, you have until May 17th to finish that out. And we do it all the time. We just did one just the other day.
Yeah.
We had somebody put $6,100 in and got a nice tax deduction out of that. Anyway.
Excellent.
Chris, we're finished for the day.
We are.
And this is my first remote completely.
Great
job. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. What I'd like to do to you. Jolly people you love with love. Show them the way you feel. Things are gonna be much better.